This is a 720 to go podcast from Chicago's WGN Radio 720.
This podcast is sponsored by ADM.
As one of the world's largest agricultural processors, ADM is uniquely positioned to serve the world's growing needs for abundant food and renewable energy. ADM.
When it comes to the business of America's farmland, you need the information from the people who know it best. That's why we bring you AgriCast with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong.
And good morning, Roger. Good morning, world, as we check in with you here on the Saturday Morning Show, along with Max Armstrong, who will be joining us from New Orleans in the Commodity Classic, and a young lady who was in on the beginning of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. We'll spend time with you until 6 o'clock. I was just looking, as Roger gave that forecast, as I look outside my window here in Huntley, Illinois, the ground is covered with snow again. And it seems since the 1st of March, we've had sunshine one day, snow overnight, and then clouds, and then sunshine, and then snow overnight. Last night, as we drove to Huntley, drove home from the Anvil Club in Dundee, pretty good snowstorm. And then I look at the forecast beyond Monday, and on Tuesday, there's a 50% chance of showers and thunderstorms continuing into Tuesday night next week. So could even see some April showers here in early March. But anyway, good to be with you here on this Saturday morning. We're looking at a fairly busy March. Number one, farmers are going to be making sure the planters and the tractors are tuned up because they're already getting concerned about getting out to get the crop planted for 2016. But as I've said before, there are several seasons in agriculture. And we have the planting season, which we're approaching. We have the growing season. We have the harvest season. And then we have the meeting season, and that's winding down right now, but it happens in late November and December and January and February with state organizations, national organizations holding conventions and meetings, and always this time of year, a lot of outlook meetings as people are wondering what's ahead weather-wise for crops, what's ahead market-wise for prices, because we are coming into a planting season following three down years in prices. That hasn't happened since the 80s when times were so tough on farms and ranches across North America. But back in the 80s, after 3 years of sharply lower prices, farmers planted a lot less. That's not the case this year, according to the preliminary estimates. And there are several firms and organizations that conduct surveys this time of the year. Right now, Allendale, based in McHenry, Illinois, is conducting its annual survey. Anybody can get involved in this one. How many acres of corn, soybeans, sorghum, and other crops will you be planting in the year 2016? And then, of course, the end of this month, we get the USDA Planting Intentions Report. Will it be any different from the February report that came out at the Department of Agriculture Ag Outlook Forum in Washington? We'll also get the quarterly pig crop report the end of the month, and then we get the quarterly stocks report on grain. So important events coming up. And among those events, on March 19th, that's 2 weeks from today, Chicago Farmers Farmland Forum will be held at the Weitendorf Center at Joliet, Illinois. And Monday is the deadline for pre-registration to save $25 on registration for that event. You can do it through Monday, but then after that, the price goes from $50 up to $75 for the day, including lunch and material that will be presented by the various participants in the Chicago Farmers Annual event. And, well, Max is going to talk a little bit later about the big toy show, Farm Toys, out at Sublette, Illinois. And Max will be talking about a special musical event that he is going to be involved in tonight. So we have a lot to talk about, and we're going to start it all by discussing again the work of the U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance. That organization now working hard to build understanding with non-farm consumers in towns and cities across the nation. We'll talk to a lady who was in on the beginning of that organization when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. One of the speakers at the recent annual Outlook meeting of the Phoenix Ag Club was Melissa Kinch. Her official title is Partner Associate Director, Ketchum West. But before we talk about your focus on agriculture, what does Ketchum do?
Ketchum's a public relations and communications agency that helps companies and organizations communicate. And I'm here representing U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance today.
Now, you were involved with farmers and ranchers at almost the very beginning, weren't you?
We helped USFRA launch in 2011. And really begin their journey in terms of communicating and earning trust with consumers.
How would you describe their success so far?
I think it's been kind of amazing. First of all, to be able to create the sustained movement. And a lot of it is really focused on getting more and more farmers to raise their voices. And we've seen so much success with that in terms of improving storytelling and seeing more and more consumers being interested in hearing from farmers and ranchers. But there's a lot more left to do.
What do you find is the biggest communications challenge that a farmer or a rancher has with a non-farm consumer today?
Well, there's two things. One thing we find a lot is just the divide between the rural and urban populations is pretty big. And people on the coast don't often understand or think about the people in the middle of the country and vice versa. But even more than that, I think when USFRA first started, getting in farmers and ranchers off the sidelines, be comfortable telling their stories, because understandably they might have felt attacked or that people wouldn't understand them, but the more they get out there and just talk about what goes on the farms, the more they realize they have a lot in common with consumers.
When farmers and ranchers are attacked emotionally, they want to respond emotionally,
right?
And sometimes that gets away from science and the facts. Do you have any suggestion on how they respond?
I think the first thing is to remember why consumers might be angry or upset in the first place. Everybody eats, so everybody thinks they're an expert in food. And eating is very emotional. People feed it to their children. It's what sustains them. So consumers have a lot of fear, and there's a lot of misinformation. If you start by understanding that they're just fearful about what they're eating and they want to do the right thing for their family, that might break down some of that defensiveness. And maybe even acknowledging, I understand you have a lot of questions, or I understand you might have a lot of fears. Let's talk about it. And try and bring it down to the human level versus kind of the attack, counterattack. Is probably the best way to start and think about things.
And have you gone into big cities to hold gatherings and hear from big city consumers?
Absolutely. That's a lot of what U.S. Farmers and Ranchers Alliance has done and does. It's very committed to getting farmer and ranchers' voices in conversations about food that otherwise they wouldn't be there. So USFRA does food dialogues. They do a lot of events. They attend a lot of events. They do a lot of media, particularly in the urban core, where people are very passionate about food, but maybe don't have access to a lot of our farmers.
And then there's the movie Farmland.
Yes.
Talk to me about that.
Farmland was a great film that USFRA helped produce with an independent documentarian named James Moll, who really set out to tell the story about the next generation of farmers. It's about five farmers in their late 20s, early 30s, and their hopes and their struggles and who they are, big and small, conventional and organic, and it's been really well received, and it continues to grow. So it's received great distribution after it was in theaters, online, and now it's going to be actually available for teachers and in the classroom through Discovery Education.
You're hoping it could be used as part of the agricultural courses?
Absolutely. We have the long feature film version and then a shorter version that's made just for the classroom. So it's really a great opportunity to help teachers bring the stories of farmers and ranchers into the classroom.
I know USFRA has the corporations and agribusiness, has the commodity groups, the farm organizations. Can individuals become supporters financially of it?
They can. USFRA has a foundation now that anyone can contribute to. And even more important than financial contributions is just raising your voice and being part of the movement. So there's a lot of opportunities to participate in social media, at events. USFRA also has a program called Faces of Farming and Ranching, where young farmers or farmers of any age really can apply to actually be a spokesperson for agriculture. So from individual donations with the foundation through raising your voice, there's a lot of ways for individual farmers to get involved.
Indeed there is, and you have that opportunity because every meeting I attend, sooner or later, the conversation turns to how can we tell our story. Our thanks to Melissa for joining us out in Phoenix for the Ag Club Outlook meeting there. Max Armstrong is in New Orleans for just a short time now because he'll be back for an event tonight. We'll check in with Max when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show. 31 degrees at O'Hare this morning after some snowfall overnight. I doubt that snow fell in New Orleans, where today they're into their final day of an event that attracts a lot of people, including Max Armstrong. Good morning, Max.
Greg Grove from Archer Financial Services joining us in the studio this weekend at the microphone to talk about markets. How would you characterize this period we're in here now? We got all this data behind us here a few days ago from USDA. There are some additional reports looming on the horizon here in the month of March. We're anticipating planting season. We're watching the demand to see what's out.
That report we're going to use just a little bit later. We're trying to get in touch with Max down in New Orleans because not only does he have the report from the Commodity Classic that is 20 years old this year. It was 20 years ago that they started, I think, with basically corn and wheat growers, and since, of course, have added other commodity groups to the event. And so We have watched that grow with interest, and apparently this year it grew even larger. And Max was there for the 2 days, opening days, and will be leaving there this morning to head north for the special event that he has going here. So do we have him?
Well, good morning, Orion, from New Orleans, this final day of what they call Commodity Classic, which has become one of the biggest agriculture events of the winter, attended by farmers, and it has been remarkable to see over the 20 years of this show how it has grown. This year, they teamed up with the Association of Equipment Manufacturers to make the trade show bigger than ever, twice the size, I'm told, of the trade show space last year. And the attendance for this show has been very good. You see, they bring together four major associations: the National Corn Growers Association, the American Soybean Association, the National Association of Wheat Growers, and the Grain Sorghum Producers as well. Those four groups hold some of their meetings, their policy sessions, to decide policy positions they want to take on things like water resource issues, such as the lock and dam matters, food labeling issues, and a whole host of other things that concern the growers right now. But the trade show is a big attraction, there's no doubt about it, and it continues this morning. They don't wrap up until this afternoon. One of the conversations I had here at Commodity Classic was talking about the Farm Mom of the Year competition. And the voting is going to be taking place on that over the next few weeks. Actually, the nomination process is underway, and the public will choose a farm mom in the competition sponsored by Monsanto, and she will get $10,000. Shelley Bossart from Oregon was the Farm Mom of the Year last year. I visited with Shelley on a number of occasions, and she's very exemplary of just what you would expect of a farm mom, trying to juggle so many tasks at one time. Some people call the farm mom the CEO of the farm in many instances. But anyway, you can nominate a mom for Farm Mom of the Year right now, up until March 29th, with an essay of 300 words or less. And then the general public will vote on five finalists selected by the American Agro Women. And those five regional winners will be voted upon in the time frame of April 22nd to March 4th, and they'll name then, just ahead of Mother's Day, the Farm Mom of the Year, will be awarded $10,000. You can get more information at AmericasFarmers.com. That's the website I want to mention what's going on for me tonight. We'll be in Champaign once again this year for a Salute to Agriculture night with the Champaign Urbana Symphony Orchestra. And if it's like last year, Orion, it'll be a grand time. It's great entertainment by all means. Stephen Alltop, who is the maestro of the Champaign Urbana Symphony Orchestra, will lead the orchestra in the works of Brahms and Barber and Borodin. I'll be on stage making some remarks, interviewing, I believe, the Illinois FFA president. And FFA members are going to be there volunteering, helping serve ice cream that is provided by Prairie Farms Dairy. Free ice cream. It's an ice cream social tonight, along with a great concert at the Krannert facility on the campus of the University of Illinois at Champaign. That's 7:30 this evening. You can get more information on their website, cusymphony.org, cusymphony.org. And before the concert and at intermission, I'll be signing copies of my book, Stories from the Heartland. There'll also be a Farmall tractor, a restored Farmall tractor being taken up the freight elevator, so that it'll be there in the lobby and folks can pose for photographs with a Farmall. Again, that's tonight in Champaign at the Krannert Building, 7:30 p.m. for that special Salute to Agriculture concert. And I want to mention we're just a couple of weekends away from an event that has also attracted quite a following through the years. Over the 34 years, this will be the 34th year of the Sublette Illinois Farm Toy Show. And tying in with that will be the Minneapolis Moline Winter Convention. The collectors of those old tractors will gather. That's 2 weeks from this weekend on both the 19th and 20th. I'll be out there signing books on Saturday night, 2 weeks from tonight, and also at breakfast on Sunday morning in Sublette. Next Saturday morning here on the morning show, we'll be talking with Don Dingus, who started that grand event all those years ago in that little town in Lee County, Illinois, Sublette. And the Sublette Farm Toy Show is attended by people from all over North America who come in there. I know on the occasions you've been there, Orion, you certainly have enjoyed it too. But we'll have more information on that coming up next weekend. We'll see some folks tonight in Champaign. That's our report this morning from the Commodity Classic in New Orleans.
And our thanks to Max, who has a busy day. And I wonder if he plays a violin or a cello. I know he drives a Farmall tractor, so he could do that. But sounds like a great event tonight in Champaign at the Symphony, Saluting Agriculture. And yes, 2 weeks from now, Sublette, Illinois, and Max will be driving on Max Armstrong Drive, and he may even slip off onto Orion Samuelson Street, because both of us have streets in Sublette that bear our name. We're at the 5:30 mark here on the Saturday morning show, and time to take a break, and then we'll hear Max talk markets with Greg Grove. Thank you, Roger. And at 24 minutes before 6 o'clock, we're back with the second half of our Saturday morning show, our weekly get-together to talk agriculture, agribusiness, industries that affect all of us indeed. And we will get to that market discussion with Max and Greg Groh in just a few minutes. But right now we say welcome to Samuelson Says, sponsored by Wink Products Company, makers of quality specialty cleaning products since 1947. I'm Orion Samuelson, and as we heard earlier, everybody has questions about food, including me. I'll share them in a moment. But if you're tired of your clothing being ruined by a spill or a stain, now there's hope, thanks to Wink Wash Away Laundry Stain Remover. This easy and safe-to-use pre-wash stain remover is a must-have in the laundry room for all washable ColorFast fabrics, including wool, cotton, synthetics, and even cashmere. And for those unexpected stains when you're on the go, watch them vanish with Wink Instant Spot Remover. Check them out at wink.com. That's WHINK.com. Now Samuelson Says, and first of all, full disclosure again this week, I am not a nutritionist, I am not a dietitian, and I certainly am not a medical doctor. I do, however, like everyone else, have some food questions of my own to add to those that I get from readers and listeners every day. These are some of my food questions. What is the definition of natural? What is the definition of pure? What is the definition of wholesome? What is the definition of locally grown? Within 50 miles, 100 or 150 miles? Since we refuse to exercise personal responsibility to make our own decisions concerning food today, we will probably turn to a government agency to make those decisions and definitions for us. I think, really, most of us know what's good for us, so why do we need the government to issue dietary guidelines? And what about locally grown? Well, I like the idea of supporting local farmers, but if you live in a winter climate, as many of us do, that means you face 6 months without fresh fruits and vegetables if you buy only locally grown. And if you live in a grain-producing area, where do you get beef, poultry, dairy, pork, and other livestock products? And then there are the labels that I have to ask about. Gluten-free, that has become the most popular label over the past year. Gluten-free, if you have celiac disease, doctors tell me you absolutely must eat gluten-free. But if not, you might be missing some healthy nutrients your body needs. GMO-free, why? We have been consuming foods containing GMOs for decades, and I have yet to see a death certificate listing that as a cause of death. But 150 scientific studies worldwide say no danger. No preservatives. Does that mean the food I purchase is going to spoil before I have a chance to enjoy it when I get it home? No hormones. I see dozens of hormone products for humans advertised on TV every week, and if they are so great for humans, why are they so bad for livestock? No antibiotics. When humans get sick, doctors prescribe antibiotics to kill whatever bug we have. Why shouldn't we be able to do the same with livestock? Because I want my food to come from healthy animals. Fortunately, the new rules concerning antibiotics do allow antibiotics if prescribed by a professional veterinarian, and I think that's a good idea. Then there's free-range chicken. Oh, when I see that on a restaurant menu, I immediately move on to the next item. Why? I remember what our chickens ate in the barnyard on our Wisconsin dairy farm. Well, I guess that's enough venting for me this week. Don't get me started on this year's presidential candidates. That would take 2 hours of programming. Those are my thoughts on Samuelson Says. Samuelson Says, a presentation of Tribune Radio Networks. So at 19 minutes before 6 o'clock now, let's get ready to talk markets. Max Armstrong and Greg Groh joining us when we continue here on the Saturday Morning Show.
Greg Groh from Archer Financial Services joining us in the studio this weekend at the microphone to talk about markets. How would you characterize this period we're in here now? We got all this data behind us here a few days ago from USDA. There are some additional reports looming on the horizon here in the month of March. We're anticipating planting season. We're watching the demand to see what's out there in the face of this stronger dollar that affects our exports, for example. How do you assess the whole scene?
Well, it's, the context we're operating in, Max, is that of a bear market. We have generally large supplies of oil seeds and feed grains around the globe, and demand that is slack, especially in comparison to the last few years. So it's kept the market in mostly a sideways trading range. There are times when the market needs to source grain, and the market rallies a little bit to get the farmer to move some grain into the pipeline. And then once the pipeline gets the grain, the markets fall back, anticipating the supply coming from South America here in the next few months. South America has had another favorable growing season generally across most regions. Yields are strong, and we're going to be competing with them here in the months ahead.
It's going to be difficult, is it not, in the years ahead to see much of a shortfall in South America? I mean, what we see down there is they're getting their act together, it seems. I mean, with transportation improving in Brazil, the economic barriers coming off in Argentina, that monster is getting bigger.
Certainly, you've seen the continued expansion of acreage, most notably in Brazil with the changes in government in Argentina. They're going to be a lot more of a competitive factor in the global market. So what you say is correct. It's hard to envision a situation where we're going to see some type of a tightness in supplies develop anytime soon unless we see a weather event someplace, either there or here in North America or in Europe, that disturbs the global supply balance. But as you say, South America is coming on, continuing to come on strong, and will be a very formidable competitor.
What do you think the mindset of the trader will be in this upcoming growing season? You know, we've proven that we can throw a lot of adversity at crops and still get an amazing crop size in this country. Is the market coming around to the point where someday these weather events are going to mean less in terms of market movement, market volatility?
Well, you know, you can build a case along those lines due to technology and some of the things that we've employed in the last 15 years here to offset what Mother Nature throws at us to some degree. But from my perspective, Mother Nature is still the great arbiter. And, you know, I've seen situations that despite a good early planting season and all the best technology in the world, if we have hot temperatures at night during pollination season in corn or a lack of moisture in August during pod fill for beans, yields can suffer and create some urgency in the market, or at least a change in psychology. Right now, your users are going to remain on a hand-to-mouth basis, not wanting to own forward ahead because they see a lot of supply available to them. That can change, though, and we've seen what can happen. You go back to 2012 when we had a major drought across the growing regions. We had a very strong market reaction, and you go back and look at those situations. That came at a time when we also had very large global demand still in place, especially most notably from China. Some of these components have weakened. But it'll take Mother Nature to really change the nature of things, at least as we see it right now.
As you look at the planting season specifically, thinking back to the planting of 2015 and how challenging it was in the Eastern Corn Belt, all of the problems that Indiana farmers had, Ohio farmers had, many in Illinois, you know, I think of the mess they had around Kankakee, the inability to get crops planted, and then Missouri. Missouri's agriculture industry was so profoundly affected, too, with planting problems. Yet we seem to have plenty of crops at the end of the day.
Well, all of those issues you just mentioned were offset by almost perfect conditions in part of the Western Corn Belt, especially Minnesota, the Dakotas, Iowa, for the most part, Nebraska. So by and large, even with the difficulties you mentioned, we still came up with, I think, the largest bean crop in history and I think the second largest corn crop we ever had. So it takes a bigger problem to affect the market psychology. If you had the kind of conditions we had in Indiana take place in Iowa, you would have a generally different view of things because of the nature and the size and scope of that crop, you know, and its importance. But when Indiana and Ohio get affected, it's just not, at least in the current environment, enough of an effect to move the market that dramatically.
How do you analyze what's going on with the exports of our corn products? And I think specifically, of course, of ethanol exports and the demand for ethanol around the world. Is that going to be one of those areas that will continue to expand? And while the ethanol demand domestically may be set and kind of on a level playing field, over the next few years, what about that global demand for ethanol we might produce?
Well, I think the global demand for ethanol and the global demand for ethanol byproducts, primarily the DDGs, that has been a very strong part of the component to ethanol plant profitability the last few years. But we're noting a slowdown there with China trying to rid itself of large surpluses of corn there within the country, which is diminishing their appetite for DDGs right now. I think the ethanol industry is quite excited about the prospects of exports of ethanol in the years ahead. It, as you mentioned, with the kind of a stagnant overall fuel demand here in the U.S. the last few years, We're going to need those exports to continue to maintain strong production in the ethanol industry in the years ahead. And so it'll be interesting to watch, but I know that from what I can tell, the ethanol industry has high hopes right now for building and furthering their export markets.
While we're on the subject of energy, noting how low crude oil has been and the expectation that it isn't likely to recover too much in the near term here, how does that contribute to the overall bearishness? Is there some weight on the commodity market, the grain market, Greg, simply because of what we see in commodities in general?
I believe that's undoubtedly the case, Max. When you look at the history of at least my involvement in these markets, almost 35, 36 years, the crude oil market has had a very big effect on overall commodity cycles. And I'm thinking back to the run-up in crude oil in the late 70s, the drop in oil prices in the 1980s, the run-up that we had at the early part of this century. It's certainly a very big component in overall commodity price levels. And from my perspective, until we get the crude oil market stabilized and it stops this free fall that we're in, it's going to be hard to justify major rallies in most other commodity categories.
What are you hearing from producer customers? How are farmers approaching this era of profound bearishness in terms of the big global supply, the not-so-robust price? What are they doing? Are they placing more emphasis on marketing or even less, saying, hey, wait a minute, we just have to watch our cost of production and get back here?
I think producers are more attuned to marketing. Over the years, I've watched producers become much more involved in marketing and interested in marketing. Unfortunately, we're in a time right now where price levels are below the cost of production into our second year of that type of an environment right now. It's going to cause financial stress. Highly leveraged operators are feeling it now, and we're seeing the results of that. This fall, there were a number of issues springing up across areas. It'll start to become more of a factor if prices stay below cost here another year. You'll start to see more cracks in the financials and in many situations. I think it's going to take a sharp pencil, and I hear a lot of producers talking about ways, how can we cut costs? How can we do things that keep our costs down in this environment? And I think that's going to be the primary focus.
Conversely, I have heard it said that there are growers who are doing exceedingly well right now. Surprisingly well, maybe is the best term to use there. They were prudent in expansion. They've been watching what's going on around them. Many of them are seizing the opportunity when a piece of land comes on the market to go ahead and buy it. They may have restrained their equipment purchases a little bit, but they say we are poised, as perhaps others fall out of the industry, to step forward and improve our lot in life here. Are you hearing some of that?
I think that's especially the case, Max, in the Western Corn Belt, where yields were again phenomenal last year. You had a lot of extra bushels to market. The price, while down, wasn't all that terrible at the time of harvest. And I think the revenue in those instances was strong enough to keep those players in the game. And like you say, when a farm comes up and there's some action around, I think the big difference between this and the late 70s and early 80s, a lot of growers don't have the land debt that they had in those years. The debt equity ratios are much better, although they have weakened in the last couple of years. Primarily, that debt is operating debt or short-term debt. It's not a lot of long-term debt. So, and it's interesting to watch the value of land, despite the low crop price and the low revenue. We've seen land values hold up reasonably well. There seems to be quite a bit of investor interest remaining in land. And so that coupled with the farmer interest that you mentioned, we're not seeing the type of declines in farmland values that we saw during a similar episode of low prices, in the last cycles.
Nice to see you, Greg. Come back.
Nice to talk to you, Max.
Greg Groh, Archer Financial Services.
3 minutes before 6 o'clock news time, earlier this week I mentioned briefly the passing of a very good friend of agriculture and the health of farmers and ranchers. Dr. Dean Emanuel, a longtime cardiologist and world-renowned researcher at the Marshfield Clinic in Marshfield, Wisconsin, passed away at age 92. He worked very hard to cure ailments that afflicted farmers in Wisconsin's rural communities, and it spread not only nationwide, but worldwide. He joined the clinic staff in 1958, had a deep interest in respiratory illnesses, and Farmer's lung disease, in addition to his care for his patients with heart disease. I was working in Green Bay, Wisconsin at the time, and I think I first met Dr. Emanuel in 1959, and over the years since then had the opportunity to visit the clinic several times, to visit with Dr. Emanuel a great deal, and his work led to the creation of the Marshfield Clinic Research Foundation in 1959. 1 year later, he helped the clinic receive its first National Institutes of Health grant, $40,000, to study Farmer's lung disease. That's a form of chronic pneumonia caused by inhaling mold spores found in baled hay, stored grain, or silage with a high moisture content. So we lost Dr. Emanuel last Sunday, but certainly didn't lose the work that he done to improve health conditions for farmers and ranchers in the food production business. Yesterday in the grain market, everything ended higher. Grains, wheat, corn, soybeans ended the day higher, and at the Mercantile Exchange, live cattle, feeder cattle, and lean hog contracts all ended the day higher. And coming into play at the Board of Trade, weather. They're now looking at a shortage of moisture in winter wheat country. The weekly U.S. drought monitor showed that 21% of Oklahoma, the number three winter wheat state last year, was, quote, abnormally dry, and that's up from 1% in that category a week ago. So we're getting into that time of year when weather will begin to impact grain prices. We enjoy your company every Saturday morning here between 5 and 6. We look forward to it again next week as we talk about events and factors that deeply affect our most basic industry, the industry that feeds us all, agriculture. Thank you for joining us, and you're listening to Chicago's very own WGN.
Orion Samuelson keeps you connected to the world of business and agriculture on WGN. Hear his reports weekday mornings on The Steve Cochran Show and during the noon hour on the Wintrust Business Lunch. Plus, catch Orion and Max on Saturday mornings at 5 a.m. only on Chicago's WGN Radio 720.